the Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Take the Stock. It is Tuesday, the 12th of September, 2023. I'm joined by costume change John. Literally had a costume change before we started this. Welcome to Take the Stock, by the way. And of course, let's have a look at the markets here. But lots of data coming out. Lots of company news out today as well, John.
Yeah, loads.
No, interim results season, 6 months, H1, lots of results. But what's the indices doing? By all means, listen, if you're watching this for the first time, hit that subscribe button right now. And also comment for the first time anything. It doesn't have to be relevant, you know. We're not often relevant. In fact, more often than not, we're not relevant. But here's the market, FTSE 100, up just over 0.5%. FTSE 250, don't know what's happening there. Oh, down 0.5%. And AIM All Share struggling a little bit, 0.09%. Anything happening with the biggies? What's the fallout today?
ABF had a pretty decent statement.
Oh, ABF are up, yeah. Vodafone, BT Group. So, oh, this is telecoms, look. Three telecoms there. Something happening there. Mm. Ander Pogačar down. Let's see, minor. And, it's not a real trend there. Let's go to 250. EasyJet up. Pretech was down. Chemring, whatever they're called.
Chemring.
Okay.
Yeah. Defense.
Chemring or Chemring? What is it?
Chemring. Defense.
Okay.
Right. Think you fire out of planes to stop them being hit by missiles is what they used to do. Yeah. Chaff, they called it, I think.
I do find, is it just me? When you're older, you become more heightened to fearful news, I think, and you're more attuned to it. But it seems to me the world has always been on the edge of a war. I think on average about 8 wars going on around the world at any one time.
It's true.
But, are we? Do you feel like there's a? It's getting more fractious between China and America, and you've got Kim Jong Un now going to see Putin. What a duo they are.
It's not a hot war, is it? It's it's certainly a war of words, and there's definitely economic warfare being waged, 100%. You know, whether that comes in the form of tariffs or protectionism, the battle over chips is kind of the big thing, really.
Yeah, I love chips.
Yeah, not those sort of chips. Not the ones that you put your cheese on down in Newport.
Yeah, that'd be odd if it was a war of chips.
Obviously semiconductors, really crucial battleground in sort of global economic, geopolitical squabbles.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, the award for the first comment today goes to AI Investor. He says, take a look at Gaming Realms. Interim results look good today. Have you had a look at those, John, today?
I haven't looked at them today. We've been looking at this so much out that they must have slipped down the pecking order.
Let's have a look here. Gaming Realms, 112 million market cap, interim results out here. So, decent growth looks like, you know, top line, 34% up, total revenue up 36%, EBITDA 4.8 from 3.5 up 37, profit before tax. It looks all good, isn't it? But I did look at the chart of this. I'll show you something here, right? And you often notice that companies rally towards results, okay? And then they pull back a bit. And this has happened here. They've rallied towards these results and pulled back. And if you look back, say, 6 months ago, this was the final results. They rallied towards these results. Then they went sideways. So they may have to go sideways. Like you say, it did pop up this morning, and that always happens. Beware of trading or buying a stock first, like, half an hour of the market open, because of course there's lack of liquidity and things move stop, but it moved up to 39 pence now, it's down to 38, so it may have to go sideways for a while. But I did look at the forecast.
Good looking company.
Good
looking company, really nice, you know, nice numbers. And you know, if you look back a few years, the top line's growing from under 7 million in 2019. So just under 19 last year, and on track to hit 23 this year. So, you know, it's really delivering, profitable, really, you know, good company. Yeah, nice numbers, not overly valued. You know, as you move into 2024, you know, you sort of, your ratios are dropping, P down to 13.8 times earnings, EV to EBITDA 7. So, I mean, you know, it's not unreasonably expensive either.
So, 15 times, I think it's looking at or something like that. But this is a nice little chart, like the little bowl there, spiked up like crazy. You got the sellers coming in, the downtrend happens. Let's get to take some of these out. I don't want the 20-day moving average. That's for dirty traders. But you can see almost like this Golden Cross, and you can see that line there, almost looking at the peaks there. Golden Cross happened here, breaks above new high, you know, pretty much there at what 30 pence. And so it's looking good there, back up there. But maybe it needs to consolidate, who knows? But it's trying to get up there, though. That's giving us, yeah, but nice looking chart. Look at that going backwards. It's done really well from 2020, from 4 pence up to 45. Right there is a 10 bagger. But can they do that again? Because, of course, now 10 bagger from here would be a £1 billion company. So that's going to be harder. But I did say today, look, just looking at, you know, there's some macro stuff out there. You know, wages gone up, net wages are now on par with inflation. So, of course, at last, people are, you know, keeping up with it a little bit. And if inflation comes down, but this, and also food inflation is coming down. So there's three things the Bank of England are looking at, I suppose. There's the wages they're looking at, but also, you know, food inflation is coming down and unemployment's going up. So you just suggest if unemployment continues to tick up, there's not going to be, you know, wage rises because there's a bit of a loose labour market. But
I mean, and there is a general sort of a more broad consideration about inflation, and certainly using you know, interest rate rises to tackle inflation, that actually as a policy it's not working. It's not working. It doesn't control some of the, you know, the most impactful things in that inflation mix. So I think, you know, at this point you must be thinking this the rate rise cycle is coming to an end.
Definitely. I mean, even Andrew Bailey said last time, you know, I mean, a couple of weeks back, wasn't it? We're very near peak now. So we know we're going to do one this month, pretty much. Will I do another one? Who knows? But we are very close to that, and that's good. And these markets are, you know, central bank driven. I mean, when they start easing, it'll rally. You know, when you know, the Fed sort of paused, it sort of rallied a bit there. P6 Jedi, Justin, I did do a podcast with my two sons trying to get into stocks and shares. They own a smattering of American stocks, but not a lot. But Monty's into it, my anger. My oldest one's not. We'll have to do another one. Steve shows how tough the market is, equals only up 4%, having had a fantastic set of results. I know sort of Paul has already done you know, an interview with the guys at Equals. It's worth checking that out because I know your old stock there.
I think, you know, underlying EBITDA doubled pretty much, and you know, sales are up about 40-odd%. It's got this real sort of engine to come in Europe, where it acquired in Belgium, it's a company called Unex. And, you know, that's basically the idea, is that if it can replicate what it's done with this, you know, the existing core business over in Europe, then, you know, you've got the same to come again.
Yeah.
But yeah, these were spectacular results. Spectacularly good.
Done very well, Equals, and let's have a look. I think it's trying to break out of that. It's been struggling at that £1 level for so long. And it literally breaks out sometimes and then comes back. But it has sort of gapped up there. You know, people gaps that it often have to be filled. But it'll make it. Sooner or later, it'll get there. But it's had a fantastic run. Like I said, when you get this kind of run going up, you do get some congestion at certain points. People taking profit. So it may mean to go sideways for a while. But then if they carry on with those kind of figures, there's no doubt it'll go higher. You know, it's just having a bit of patience, I suppose, you know, isn't it? You know?
No, it's good. It's good. There was another company that was not dissimilar to Equals. Perhaps, you know, a little bit behind it in the sort of growth journey was Cornerstone.
I've been watching them for a while, and they are literally a mini Equals. And in fact, the guy who was the CEO there was ex of Equals. So it's worth watching this because, in fact, it's writing about there. CFSF. Bit of content there. But interim results, the growth is very good. 90% at 3.6 million. It's only interims. Now, they're only, what's the market cap? 7.5 million market cap. So literally, if they can do that again, there'll be one-time sales, you know, it's cheap. And they are cheap. Like I said, cash generated from profits. They are going towards cash equivalents. And they do say somewhere they don't need to raise any more. The board is confident that they're sufficient to support existing growth plans. So there's a funding position, that is. So that's always good to hear. Growth, and they don't need to tap the market up. Like I said, there's, you know, I did put a sort of range dates in the chart. And it's popped up there, but obviously you've got some sellers coming in again, so it may need to go sideways a little bit. But looking good. Keep an eye on that and put it in your watch list, Cornerstone. What else we got, John? The front page of Vox.
Well, H Vivo. So going back to our listener viewers' point about, you know, companies not really jumping on what are absolutely blinding results. Full disclosure, I own these. I bought a few more this morning, actually, because once those results came out, these are really quite strong results.
Chat with Mo.
Yeah, that's worth a watch. To get a bit of colour on exactly what's going on there. But there's a lot of detail in the statement. But basically, it's more human challenge models that develops in conjunction with clients. You know, more clients, including clients. You know, more regions. Expanding the scope of the services, the scope of the contracts that it's offering. So, you know, sort of laboratory services as well. Real focus on operational efficiency to make sure that it protects its margin. Margin has expanded. There you go. You can see EBITDA margin up from 12.6 to 19.1. And they've signed a deal for a big new facility down in the Docklands, which is where they basically run these sort of quarantine clinics where they infect volunteers with infectious diseases to build these human challenge models to understand how diseases work. And so this big facility, which sounds like they've got an absolute, cracking deal on it, expands the size of the trials they can run or the number of trials they can run, sort of consolidates everything in sort of, I think it's two floors, labs on one, quarantines on the other, so that basically everything is much, much more efficient, and a client's funding this as well. So, yeah, really, like, what a dividend. We've announced a nominal dividend. Details not out yet, but, look at the cash position.
Yeah, nice. And they've got order book contracted 78 million, increases revenue guidance to 55 million, exclude other income.
Yeah.
And it increases EBITDA margin guidance to 19%.
Yeah, nice, yeah. Nice What's not to like here? I mean, the cash profile, Mo pointed out to me when we were chatting yesterday, a lot of their clients are paying up front. So, that's obviously flattering that cash position somewhat, but nevertheless, it's a very, very cash generative model, and it's good to have that sort of cash profile. The operating cash conversion is massive.
Yeah, that's I think that's what people call cup and handle. It goes on this, and that's the handle, and it bows up again, so it should break up there. That's why one on sort of chart formation. What else we got? So we've covered Cornerstone pretty much. Oh, the funds. Kartik Kumar of Artemis.
Just gone up. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. Zenova, fire protection, bit of news there. What is the news on that, John?
A lot of news coming out of Zenova. But again, I like these products. They are intumescent fireproof paints, paints and renders with thermal insulation properties, as well as, fire safety equipment, extinguishers, that sort of thing. But this is a deal with Kensington and Chelsea, and obviously Kensington and Chelsea Council was in the spotlight a few years ago, as we all know, very tragic events at the Grenfell Tower. So it's kind of a flagship council in regards of these sort of products. And they've got a deal, and it's the first one that's going to be delivered through their newly agreed distribution agreement with Dulux Decorator Centres. And it's for only three of their properties, Kensington and Chelsea's properties. So, it looks a bit like a trial in that sense, but they've got more like 10,000 in total properties to look after there. So, should all go well with that first order. This is the sign of things to come, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're starting to commercialise, aren't they? So their revenue is quite small at the moment. But the chart is looking quite good. If you can see there, like I said, it's broken out this sort of these previous highs up. Well, 5.5, and just above that, it's trying to break out there. So you can see that's pretty much a bottom happening here, bottom process here happening. Okay, so Simon says, historically, haven't shares rallied at the end of interest rate falls and max recession rather than when interest rates have topped out? It's hard to say. I've gone back loads of times and looked at this, but generally, the markets perform worst 6 to 12 months before a recession. And then it sort of bottoms around about that. By the time that recession's announced, it's largely everyone realizes it's happened. But that in conjunction, I don't know. I assume what you may have is a relief rally on the terminal rate, hitting that or them signifying that. And then, of course, you will still have a lot of companies struggling because if they have got debt or if they are being affected by the cost of living crisis, if they are consumer facing, they're still going to be hit from both ends. So you've got to find companies not being hit by the consumer, don't have a lot of debt and all that stuff. So, you know, but then you may get rallies in those companies as well. It's hard to say, isn't it?
It does feel like that's playing out at the moment. You know, we do know that the economy is weakening. We've certainly seen over in Europe. I mean, Germany is the case in point. So it does feel like this, but there's economic bad news to come, six months down the road. But if that's the case, and, you know, the market does, you know, appear to be showing signs of wanting to rally, then that scenario does seem to be very much playing out.
Yeah. And remember, we are just even looking at historical terms. I mean, AIM, for example, is 2 years in now to this from the high. That's, you know, a bit longer than the average. Normally it's a year to 18 months, you know, because I understand it's because of the worry of interest rates staying up higher for longer. Mm. But, you know, if we see the end of the tunnel, then the markets will tend to rally a bit, I think. But it's hard to say, you know, it's hard to go back and say, is there a precedent for this? Because everything's changed. You know, going back to, what was it, last time the interest rates were very high and the recession's on, you know, it's a different kind of economy now altogether, isn't it? You know, more digital, it's more flexible, it's working from home. So it's hard to say. But I think the markets, having been hammered for 2 years, if they see signs of relief, it'll rally in relief. But I think it'll be volatile, because businesses will still suffer. There's certain businesses more than others. But I think even then, though, those businesses that are suffering at the moment, like, say, hospitality, loans, I think they'll rally on some relief. The interest rates are not going to continue higher.
I tell you what is interesting. I haven't covered it today, but it's sort of part of this story about the business landscape and Time Finance. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've looked at this in the past.
I was thinking of investing in here, but. But yeah, I mean, they said the order book has gone up, isn't it? The loan book, is that
right? It's their loan book, yeah. So 175.8 million, you know, a record level. I think it's quite interesting. I had a little dig around their website to see exactly what sort of lending they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's four types of it. So it's lending to businesses, and it's lending asset finance.
SMEs, yeah.
Yeah, asset finance, so lending to help companies either buy or renew their asset base. Invoice financing, you know, cash flows, you're basically lending against the value of invoices that haven't yet been paid. Straight loans and vehicle financing. You know, obviously, vehicles are very important to a lot of small businesses. And you know, they're not massive deals, but they're certainly significant. And they're lending to sort of quite small but significant companies.
I do like them. The reason why I didn't invest was I just thought that how much can they scale? That's all. They may be a nice little business that'll turn over a nice profit for a while, but how big will that profit grow? Because that's my only concern about them. But the chart, I mean, but I missed on the rally, a cracking rally. I mean, the banks, you know, high street lenders are not lending, are they? That's the trouble. They're stepping in. And it's the same with the effects and all that stuff. It's like Equals and Cornerstone. You know, the banks are now stepping back from that, and you're getting.
I like it. So companies that are filling a void, as you say, that's been left by bigger banks. Banks who are trying to, you know, de-risk their loan book. And, you know, that's not they're saying de-risking, not by looking at individual companies and saying, no, you are too risky, but just saying writing off whole sectors and industries as too risky. So when they're not. And, you know, SMEs are the lifeblood of this country, really. So as you say, you know, companies like this and companies in the fintech space that are filling in to do what big banks have on the whole failed to do. I think quite interesting. I like the look of this company. I'm going to have a dig.
They've had a share consolidation, haven't they, Iconics? Because otherwise they're 1.2 billion. I think.
Yes. Yeah.
But, we need to sort that out.
Nice company. This again, sort of problem solving. You know, it's ingredients, bio-friendly ingredients for cleaning products.
Everything from here, from dishwasher tablets to it's in a bit of a. I don't know what's happening there on the chart, but it's in a bit of a sideways trend there. They're up 1% at the moment. They've got plenty of cash. The worry that I'm worried about is that they're loss-making still. I didn't see a forecast for profit anyway.
I've got a profit forecast here. So 2023 turnover, 7.7 million, sort of EBITDA minus 0.86, and a little bit of a bigger loss at a pre-tax level. But, you know, that's prudent. You know, they're not having to invest mega amounts of money to get to profitability, and you know, they're growing. There are sort of very, very clear market trends behind them. And I think there was something in the statement that suggested that, you know, where they had been working with customers to provide these sort of, you know, bio-friendly ingredients for, you know, eco products, those companies were taking market share.
Yeah.
Those customers. So yeah, I think it looks good. There's
How much did they lose? Because they got $10.9 million. So they got plenty of runway, but it's just
loads of runway.
It is a slow sort of tick up in the losses come down. It's half pretty much
operating. Yeah, but you want to have a look at the cash outflow really to see what it doesn't strike me that it's burning through large vast amounts of cash.
Well, there we are, not just shy of a million, but they've got 10 million pretty much. So okay.
IPO earlier last year. This year, I can't remember what IPO.
Iconics, they've been around a while now.
Have they?
Anyway, there's some Mopar with John there. There's Equals there with thing. Most read, in fact, most followed now is Cornerstone. HVivo is second. Aptus third. Gaming Realms, there we are. Someone's just hit the follow on that a couple of times. We just looked at that. I don't understand what this company does. It's literally one of the most read.
They
release any old rubbish and people read it. I think for a long time people thought it was going to make them a millionaire. And if you look at the chart on Supply at Me Capital, I think, what is the point of this company? If you hold this stock, let me know. What is the point of it? Literally monetizing inventory in blockchain, but they've never managed to do that yet. So it's just nonsense, actually. But anything else happening? Keffi has had some good discussions apparently with the Ethiopian government about environmental licenses and all that stuff going on. So that's the it is. So do you know what? Silver Bullet. I quite like Silver Bullet.
Yes, it was nice. What else is it? Nice company.
Hang on a sec. Where's I was looking at another market then, and any other content on there, John, you'd be looking at?
What have we got through? I can't remember what we've got through. We've covered Ocean Harvest. Ocean Harvest. That's where I was getting confused.
I was looking at the winners. I couldn't find it. Yeah, it's dropped a lot. I do like this company, but yet, like I said, their revenues are quite small compared to their market cap as yet.
Yeah.
It's, a leading commercial scale producer seaweed blend ingredients for animal feed market. It's one of those ones to keep an eye on, but what are they doing there? Let's scroll down. Let's look how much they've got there. They raised some money. The IPO.
That's somebody I was thinking of when I mentioned the IPO a minute ago.
So revenue, 1.7 up from 1.2. It's a nice growth. EBITDA, they're making a loss there, of course. But how much cash they got here?
Quite a lot, because they didn't float that long ago.
Yeah, 4.7 million. So plenty of cash there. But if you look at that, it's one of the fallers here today. But I do like the sector in this area. Look at that. It rallied strongly from IPO, even during the sort of bear market, from 16 to sort of 26 pence. They came on the podcast and thought, I like this. But the figures weren't backing up their valuation at that level. And even now it's dropped a bit. But it'll find it. One of the things where you need to sort of keep an eye on, put an alert on the chart. I do like that area where they're at, where they're in. Was there anything else?
I quite like this. I mean, it's, animal feed. I mean, we know that, the world's demand for meat is insatiable, despite what is happening at the likes of BSF Enterprise that we spoke of the other day. But actually, feeding them is where the issue comes from, because obviously a lot of sort of arable land is turned over to producing animal feed, rather than sort of feedstock that can be eaten by humans. And it seems incredibly wasteful, this sort of agricultural model. And what Ocean Harvest is doing is basically harvesting seaweed, almost as the name suggests, and turning that into animal feed. It's got some big customers. It's got some got some good contracts there. So
Stephen says, if you were forced to buy a stock now, which one would it be? In what scenario would that happen? Gun to your head, buy a stock now. Which one are you going to buy? Just buy it. Okay. How much? Any? Just buy it. Which one? I'd never be forced to buy a stock, but I suppose sometimes you are forced by some fear of missing out. Emotionally forced, I suppose. But I've got plenty of ideas I go with. I don't say them because largely they are small micro crap. I get accused of ramping. But apart from the stocks I own, I'm quite happy with the ones I mean, I'm always looking around, for. I do believe there's a bit more buoyancy, and I've said this for a while, in the microcaps, nanocaps area. And I do like small companies. I look for, you know, first of all, scale, size, scale. And I look for that and thinking, okay, this company can move up and down, but it's sustainable as well. That means, are they going to be profitable in the future, in the not too distant future, and have they the cash to get there, but also can they scale very well? That's what I look for. You'd be surprised. I mean, you can always go to the resource sector, because of course, if you're doing a mine, then what is selling is scalable, pretty much pretty attached to the commodity price. But aside from that, I do like tech, and I like med tech and all that stuff. And I think, you know, the companies I look at scale. But Stephen, if you were forced to buy a stock, which one would it be? John, if you were forced to buy a stock, which one would it be?
I mean, if it's something that I don't own already, and something that, you know, I think has bags of potential, Invinity Energy Systems keeps coming back to me.
Yeah, I got tripped out of those. I held those, but a stop loss. And I think I got tripped out. In fact, look at the chart there. I do like them. I mean, in fact, if you follow them online on Twitter, they are always posting.
I suspect one of the reasons they're doing that is because, you know, there are a lot of naysayers on Twitter and out there in the social media world who are very, very critical of the approach that the governments in particular are taking to energy policy, and obviously the old wind auction failure has given grist to their mill. Further still, very critical of the idea that, you know, renewable power is cheap. Very critical of the idea that renewable power can be stored. And, you know, of course, there are limitations to the way that sort of lithium-ion-based energy storage works. It's not really an alternative to generation. It's more sort of grid balancing type stuff. But I think the vanadium solution, and again, I had a sort of bit of a spat with someone about this, does work slightly differently and has the potential to really, you know, take energy storage on a stage further. And I think a lot of what Invinity is doing on social media is really combating a lot of the, you know, I hesitate to call it disinformation, but it's only trying to clarify, you know, what it's doing, how this technology works, and addressing the criticism of it. So, yeah. I like Invinity.
Well, I think a lot of people deny, you know, what's happening because they have an interest, largely from an investor perspective. A lot of them deny that we are going to renewables because they have interest in oil and gas, you know, and they still want to, no, I've got a big position in oil and gas, I'm sticking with it. And so always be prepared to change your mind. You know, that's, if you don't, you fall in love with the stock, because that's how you can lose lots of money. But
it's true.
As far as the chart is concerned.
There is another company, actually, so while you're looking at that, Ilika. They seem a long way from commercializing what they've got, particularly on the larger battery side of things for this Goliath project. But you know, again, you know, if they get this right, and they seem, you know, like good scientists, and they've got their small scale batteries to a commercial point, then you know, that's potentially transformational as well. For sort of EVs and that sort of thing. So I do keep an eye on that. I was slightly worried about the price you have to pay for it.
It is. They're not cheap. I mean, I said they're doing minimal revenues, and what's the market cap on those now? I said one of my best Christmases ever. That was, I bought a nice position in those back in, when was it? And they doubled. And literally, there's no stock. This is where they doubled, sort of Christmas time, and they sort of doubled. Well, they started coming downhill then, when people was. A lot of people are comparing the American sort of solid state batteries, and American valuations are nuts.
Someone's going to crack this at some point, you know. Someone's going to crack these problems, and you know, if you are in one of the companies that is one of those that cracks it, you know, and Invinity and Ilika both have a very good chance of being that company, then you could do quite well. Yeah, but it comes.
I've little doubt. There's a little bit of doubt. The only thing that's holding Invinity back, I think, is they will need one more funding round, not for a while, and they sort of stated that in it, but there shouldn't be a problem because their growth, literally top line growth, is really impressive. And you're talking about, you know, going up to from, triple digit millions. And then profitable. So it's one of those ones to keep an eye on, because they are one of the leaders in their field.
You mentioned medtech a minute ago, and I like medtech as well. You know, we've talked about intelligent ultrasound this week, and Yeah, there are a number of other companies out there, particularly on the software side of things. It's not up on the site yet. I had a chat with the chief executive of a company called Feedback today.
I got history of Feedback. Yeah.
No, let's don't worry about your history. But I like, I like any of these solutions that will help the NHS become more efficient. Because
I do. But they've been doing it. They've been obviously moving at a glacial
because
pace.
Because the NHS moves at a glacial pace, and that has been the problem. And I was an analyst 20 years ago, looking at IT, and the NHS. You know, future information. Oh, I mean, it was just this huge, multi-billion pound project that basically got switched off with no progress to show for it whatsoever. 10 billion quid down the drain. Because NHS is really hard to work with. So, you know, whilst the progress at these companies and, you know, Feedback has actually started to, you know, deliver some top line growth there. You know, if the NHS finally wakes up, if it finally wakes up to the fact that, you know, digital transformation is absolutely key to solving problems with staffing and waiting lists and, you know, patient outcomes, most importantly of all, then, you know, we've got a lot of good companies on the UK market.
I've held these in the past. I mean,
we may have held these in the past, the world of technology has moved on.
Hang on a sec. So they're doing this Bleeper Care Locker, Bleeper thing, right? And there's several products like that online. They've got a couple of NHS trusts signed up. But I mean, if you look at the revenue, the 74% increase, the 1 million, right? They are valued at 10 million, almost, you know, 10 times sales. Yep. And yet they're losing 3 million. And so they're going, okay, they've got cash. They carry on with cash for 2 years. I can't see them expanding that fast because literally the sign-up rate is not that quick.
Yeah, I just feel that, you know, that may be true. And I think, you know, in the past, that has certainly been a big problem for the companies trying to sell into the NHS. But, you know, when companies do crack it,
The rewards are
quite substantial. So, you know, look at EMIS. Yeah. EMIS, which is a huge business providing patient record systems for doctor surgery. Tristel, which built a fantastic business, you know, selling cleaning products into the NHS. So you know, I am wary, you know, of any company selling into the NHS because it's tough. But, you know, if they have the cash to do it and the products to do it, and modern technology is very different to the technology that you know they were trying to deploy 20 years ago. You know, the cloud is a game changer, particularly when you're dealing with the scale of data that the NHS has. And, you know, AI potentially brings a whole new layer to it as well. So I think it's worth keeping an eye on. You know, would I buy any of these companies today? I'd have to have a very good look at them because of that history. But again, you know, big problems to be solved in the NHS, just as there are big problems to be solved in the energy market. And I keep my eye on those areas.
Yeah. Craig, you say he likes a chalk to liquor. Yeah, well, listen, if you're going to break up about 50 pence, it'd be quite nice here, at this sort of wedge. Or our results do, because it could break down. I don't know when the next, so, you know, it could break down either way.
Not sure.
But I want to see a movement towards the upside first. Are there results there? No, the results
July,
are coming
out.
July, so, okay. Okay, and just quickly, finally, on some big business stories, is that Pay, probably seen this all over the headlines there, Pay have matched regular pay, excluding bonuses, rose by 7.8% in May to July compared with the year earlier, matching the pace of inflation over the same period. So that's a nice change. But as also jobs have gone down, unemployment's at 4.3%. This is from 3.8%. So it's a positive and negative there. You know, from the Bank of England's point of view, they think, OK, well, unemployment's ticking up, but also pay has gone up. But will pay continue to rise now? Inflation's coming down. I don't think it will. You know, this is good news, you know, for everyone. The pace of grocery inflation has eased to its lowest level in more than a year, according to closely watched services Kantar. 12.2% higher than a year ago. But this was, of course, peaked at 17.5% in March. So that's not bad. And finally, to be a pensioner, eh? 8.5% in April. I can't wait to get old and draw my pension. There's a triple lock thing, isn't it? So they increase state pension. It's the highest of the average earnings, inflation, or 2.5%. And of course, it's inflation, which is crazy. So, I can't wait to get old. I am.
I'm happy to wait.
I suppose we are. Hey, it's all relative, isn't it? My son says to me, "Shut up, you fat bald idiot." So you know, he considers me as he's got away with the words. And I thought, "You'll be the same one day, Mont. That's one thing guaranteed. you will too be a fat, bald idiot. So, you know, not my words. Okay, that's it. Plantar in the US is doing loads of stuff for the NHS. Plantar, yeah, MedTech as well too. So MTech in this country, so may as well look at that. They are, you know, top line sort of seems to be growing, but they are loss-making as well, just about.
Yeah, well, look, when we finally get a government that actually knows what it's doing, we might actually have a chance for some of this stuff.
Do you know what? I don't think we'll ever get that. It's easy in the opposition. I mean, I don't know, I'm not a fan of Conservatives, but it is easy in the opposition.
I'm not suggesting it's up there.
No, I know. But once you get up there and actually have to do something constructive, there's a lot more pressure, I think. And let's be honest. Do you know what? Will we be still alive when you get a government that knows what it's doing? I don't know. Anyway, in fact, I don't want to go on, but it's true. That guy came out the other day, I don't know who it was, but he's saying Rory someone, used to be Conservative.
Rory Stewart.
Yeah, and you're saying that it's insane. And I was watching Laura Koenigsberg last night.
It's very good, actually.
But it's insane how ministers come into a job for like 5 months. And like, you know, to be an expert in that field, you have to work in there all your life. But they come in for 5 months and they go to another job then. It's all about career. It's not about actually caring about the department you're representing. And it is insane the way these things are. These people are not qualified to be in these positions, yet they jump in and out of these positions every 5-6 months. And no wonder. There's no consistency, is there, of government?
I think we have a very severe problem with our system of government in the United Kingdom. I don't hold my breath in waiting something to change. But it's quite clear that party politics, tribal party politics, is an absolute disaster.
Yeah. In fact, let's not slip into politics.
No.
Let's not sully and do it ourselves with that chat. Cool. Excellent. Thanks, everyone. Don't forget, if you haven't hit that subscribe button, please do. And if you like the content, please share it. Tell someone else to watch. That would help a lot. And we'll speak tomorrow. Bye-bye, everyone.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.